Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 538. Science Faction, tell me a story.
When I met your mother for the first time, Bobby, I didn't know she was your mom, and I had never seen a woman of such beauty and confusion in my life, and I knew I had to have her.
Sure.
And then, crazy, I find out the woman who's I lost my virginity to, her son is in my English class.
So what you're saying is that you, as since it would have to be before you knew me, as a 12-year-old, yes, were banging random Hungarian immigrants in their mid-50s.
I have a thing. I have a type.
Okay. Fair enough.
Bobby, do not deny your mom's sexuality.
I don't, and I won't. And speaking of denying sexuality, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my sexually embracing comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
Moms fuck too, Bobby. I'm sorry that offends you.
Literally, by definition, every mom
sometimes
has
they fuck your podcast host before you even know what a podcast is when he's 12 years old.
Sometimes. I have a feeling not this time, but sometimes. I actually, you know what? I'm actually going to go back and say that probably not sometimes. And like, if this has ever happened to any podcasters, let me know.
Your mom is still kicking, so I have a little bit left to prove that she's not a liar, even though she's in her 80s now, I believe.
I just don't think this is a common podcast thing where you find out that your podcast co-host accidentally fucked your mom when you guys were both 12 before you met. I'll talk to Ira Glass, but I don't think it's what happens.
Joe Rogan regularly bangs Red Band's mom, but that's a power thing.
For those of you guys who know, our Thursday show is one where we explore some of our old bits. This is a Tell Me a Story or Tell Me a Science Story, either one, where we talk about a specific article that came out this week in the context of a broader story about what that is and why it's important. So, without further ado, let's get right on to Tell Me a Story.
Tell me a science story. You're like children's stories, only with less sex and more science.
Okay, so this story is going to be the story of ancient rock art. So this is based, the impetus of this is based on a paper published this week that describes a newly discovered 45,500-year-old cave drawing in Indonesia. It's one of the oldest cave drawings of all time, and it is definitely the oldest known rock feature of a living animal. It's of a pig. In fact, on the wall we see a couple of pigs,
corkscrew penis.
They didn't include that. And then on the ceiling a little bit further back is another one in red ochre. Very, very interesting. It's on an island called Sulawesi in the south of Indonesia. It dates to somewhere between 32,000 to 73,000 years ago, though we do kind of like that 45,000-year-old date. It is, by the way, in a place where we have found other ancient rock art and was part of what used to be a large peninsula that stretched out Southeast Asia back when the sea level was much lower, which was part of the way people eventually ended up getting to Australia. So this might be the people who were part of that migration into that area that became the Aboriginal Australians. Very, very interesting for a lot of reasons this discovery is, but let's take a step back and look at rock art more broadly and the story of rock art.
When you say rock art, I like picture, you know, that buff looking dude with a sword above his head and like a lady holding onto his leg.
No, that's heavy metal art, I think, actually. Yeah, that's the confusion there.
You know what? I was hoping that for the interest of this story, there was not confusion and that we were about to learn about some fucking metal.
Yes.
But fine, let's go learn about some old dudes from Southeast Indonesia.
Or Dwayne Johnson, either way.
The rock's involved? Never mind, keep going.
So how do we define or discern rock art and why is it so special? You can do a lot of things to make rock art. You can do something called a petroglyph, where you actually cut into the rock to do a design. Or you can paint on a rock, which is the type of rock art that we're going to be talking about. It's sometimes called a pictograph or a pictoglyph. And it is basically painting or drawing on rocks, usually large, non-moving boulders. So it has like this idea of permanence. And on its face, you might just think it's just another aspect of archaeology. It's like finding a stone tool or a ceramic sherd or something like that. But in fact, there is something important about rock art. There's something very different about that from the other artifacts that we encounter. Number one, it leaves a record of individual people. It is not a collective community that, you know, built a pyramid or created a village site. Instead, this is one individual person who drew this thing. Usually, sometimes groups can do it, but usually it's one individual person who made this drawing. So you are literally coming into contact with the work of a single individual. Number two, it can tell you a lot about the lifestyles, but more importantly, the ideas and values of a group of people. It's something that's much harder to get from things like stone tools. You can get so much from rock art, even rock art that's not literal, because sometimes it's a literal thing. This is going to be a hunt. We're, you know, drawing the hunt that we did or a battle that we had. But sometimes it's drawing the ideas of the afterlife.
Sometimes it's just dicks.
Sometimes it's only dicks. And by the way, you think that's a joke? There's a lot of dicks in
rock art.
That was
my guess. Okay, Bobby, truth time. What percentage of rock art is just dicks? Is that something that's just been a constant throughout humanity?
And vaginas. By the way, there's actually it's so common that rock art vaginas are a feature that have their own name. We have a name for rock art vaginas. We call them yonis, and they're prevalent from places where we are. I have found yonis here before in San Diego, so they're present.
Yonis for my homies.
Yeah, they're present in the old world. They're all around. It's so common to have penises and vaginas in your rock art through prehistory that it's like one of the few universals across humanity.
I love it. This makes me feel like every time I've been judged by somebody who's like, ew, a penis joke. No, you deny your humanity.
It's like you're studying the ancient Greeks in their own language.
I understand Plato so much better than I did 10 minutes ago, that he thought dicks were funny too.
So you can communicate not just like the physical realities of your world like you can with other artifacts, where if we find some, you know, bison bone, we know what you were hunting. You could actually convey the bison with halos around it or something to convey parts of the afterlife. Like, you can get ideas that are not necessarily part of the literal world. And so it's a way to actually see the thought process of a single individual who could have lived tens of thousands of years ago, which is an amazing thing to think about.
Bobby, I know you don't want to play favorites, but if there was one culture, prehistorical civilization that nailed the cock, that just, they drew the best yonis and penises around.
India did a real good job. I gotta say, a lot of the Indus Valley civilizations, they had a lot of cockballs and vajis. You know, they were pretty strong.
Way to go. Way to go. That's respect, India.
That's how you get a billion people. But you also have to remember this, is if you think about what rock art is, that's somebody trying to communicate an idea. And whether they're communicating to another person that might find it later, other people in their tribe, or like the gods, you know, it's a religious
ceremony. I'm trying to commute that my friend Mike is gay, which is why I wrote on this rock, Mike is gay.
But like, regardless, you're trying to communicate with somebody. That's so much different than what we see in the rest of archaeology. Because in the rest of archaeology, for the most part, what we're finding in prehistory is the remnants of somebody's life. They're not trying to communicate to somebody else something by making this arrowhead. They're trying to shoot a deer. They're not trying to communicate to somebody the importance of their spiritual beliefs by making this pot. They're just trying to find something to hold water. But this rock art, by definition, is an attempt to communicate ideas to an other. And in and of itself, that makes it a very unique type of artifact that we find, or feature that we find. Very, very interesting. I've always been really fascinated with rock art. Now, we are lucky to live in the era we are, because rock art fades really fast. But starting about 20 years ago, a guy named John Harmon developed a software called DStretch, which I have been an avid user of since about 2008.
Yeah, I bought DStretch and was very dissatisfied. I now will read what a software program does.
That's right. We got into before how you got it confused. We were doing a different kind of de-stretching. But this one actually pulls out otherwise invisible wavelengths of light from pictures you take, and you can see rock art that has been faded away. So sometimes you can see part of a rock art panel, so you take a picture and then you put it through de-stretch, you can peel up the rest. Sometimes you don't even know anything's there. You are just blindly taking pictures. You run the pictures through de-stretch and you can find out there's rock art there. So very, very neat stuff. It's very interesting time in archaeology right now, because we are at a time now where we can find certain rock art that you haven't been able to see for thousands of years. So it's a really exciting time to be looking at this stuff. And because rock art isn't just a byproduct of the way people are living, it's an intentional attempt to communicate ideas. It's also often associated with religious rituals, which, as we talked about a few weeks back, with the discovery of a massive 10,000-year-old rock art panel, basically stretching like 8 miles in the Colombian rainforest, we can see into the lives of long dead people. In that case, we actually saw the drawings of now extinct animals and things. They're like, wow, we can see how these people actually lived 10,000 years ago. And I think they they went back as far as 12,000 years ago, because of the pictures they are drawing that have survived into us. And that's just such a, it's such a neat thing to be able to like see it. And I don't know if any of you guys have had the opportunity to do this, but as somebody who's, you know, been a primary investigator on a few rock art sites and is currently working in a place that has doing some contract work up in the Coso Mountain Range with some of the most amazing rock art in North America, when you see it, you are looking at this one-on-one communication of an individual from thousands of years ago who is trying to tell you something about the life that they lived. And that is an indescribably cool feeling.
I want people to know that my dick is huge. That's why I'm drawing it. Bobby, what percentage, now you know you said that rock art by definition is art meant to convey a message to somebody else. What if that art, I agree with you, clearly most of this is meant to, but what percentage of rock art was just meant to convey something to you? Like, for example, when you were a kid, did you ever find woods porn? As in porn in the woods?
Yes, I am aware of woods porn, and I did stumble across it a few times.
It is something that I don't even know how I would explain it to my children or how you would explain it to your children, the concept of woods porn. But is there any cave painting rock art that was essentially, you stumbled onto it, like you as an archaeologist stumbled onto it as a child would stumble onto pornography, but basically this image was meant for one person. Yeah. It was meant for the person who drew it. He drew some some masturbatory material in this cave that he thought nobody would ever find it. Next thing you go with your de-stretching material, with your de-stretching software, and next thing you know, you found this guy's 10,000-year-old woods porn.
He'd be so embarrassed if I knew how into fat chicks he was.
I'm into this, bro. That drawing's a bit hot.
It's great.
I saw the couple LBs you painted on those hips.
Hey, I'm a big fan of the Venus of Willendorf. I think we should bring that back as an art concept. So on to rock art. So some questions about it. Do other species do it? We seem to have some evidence that Neanderthals did. Not necessarily super concrete, but some good evidence. But other than that, not really. So the other interesting thing is it seems to be a somewhat uniquely human. You might expand it to human and Neanderthal or Homo sapien and Neanderthal type activity. So we can't be 100% sure because rock art does occur in places, including the one we just talked about in Indonesia, where we shared space with another hominid. We shared space with Homo erectus, at, you know, 100,000 years ago, could be as far as that. And then, you know, around there, little creatures like Floresiensis and Luzonziensis and stuff. So maybe it was them, but it seems to mainly be Homo sapien thing, which makes it kind of neat because it seems to be, it's like our deal. It's our word, Damien. Rock art is our word.
Other animals can see a penis and appreciate a penis, but they can't describe that penis to other generations.
Yeah, and they never draw the veins. So then, when and where do we first see rock art appear, and what does it look like? So we've talked before about art before. Art can, depending on how you define it, can be super, super old. We have some scratchings, some like hatch mark scratchings on some shells in Southeast Asia that might be a couple hundred thousand years old, and that could be considered art. But in terms of rock art, like painted stuff on caves, the oldest hunting scene, so these are going to be set like different types of scenes, the oldest hunting scene is dated to around 43,000 years ago. And it's on the exact same island as the one we just talked about that we just discovered and published this week, Sulawesi in South Indonesia. That's the oldest hunting scene. We covered the discovery of that in only 2019, so that's also a recent discovery. There's some other nearby old cave paintings in Borneo, which is also very close, relatively pretty close. That's around 40,000 years old. And there's some stuff in the Iberian Peninsula, Spain, France region that is somewhere around 40,000 years old. We have one we think is about 60,000 years old, and that's the one we think is done by Neanderthals because we don't think human beings came there till about 40,000 years ago. Who knows? We might find that that was a Homo sapien incursion from North Africa into there 60,000 years ago or something like that. But as of right now, that's kind of the only outlier of rock art being a phenomenon outside of just our own species. We have some stuff from Cape Town, South Africa that's a little different because it's not painted on boulder, which you'd consider this type of rock art where it's immovable, it's going to be there forever. It's painted on a small portable rock. So that changes in diagnostic criteria from a feature to an artifact, meaning an unmovable thing to a movable thing. But that looks to be about 70,000 years old. So that would be kind of the oldest representation in Homo sapiens of painting on rocks to convey meaning.
What, when you say movable, I mean, like, what are we talking? You know, like...
Oh, just like small something you can carry with you.
Oh, I thought you were bragging about your upper body strength. Oh, no, it's about 90 pounds. you know, it's movable.
Yeah. Hey, dude, the natives who were around here were not big people. Like, the Spanish described them as being, like, on average, like 5'4 or something. And that's malnutrition and a lot of things as well, genetics and nutrition. But I have picked up the metates that they would carry from camp to camp. And they are fucking heavy, dude. They are like 100 pounds. And they would carry them long ass distances. So little people did some big shit back then.
They were burly.
They just had grit. They're just like, and the women carried the metates. A friend of mine is the last living Quaime Indian. She's on the top of a mountain here in San Diego. And her grandma walked 3 days once she realized that she's like 80 something years old. So her grandma was obviously in like the 1800s. And once her grandma realized the writing on the wall that like the white people were taking up all the lands, the people around here, they weren't settled in one area. They would go from camp to camp to camp, depending on what season it was. And she realized she wouldn't be able to go back and get her metate. And you have like the same metate your entire life. It's your grinding stone, basically. The big grinding thing you grind in, like a big giant grinding bowl almost. And she realized that the writing on the wall. And so she did a 3-day walk, grabbed her metate from the camp where it was set at, and did a 3-day walk back up to a mountain at 6,000 feet. And she was an old Indian woman in her like 70s.
Sounds like she kept it tight. You got any pictures?
But there is some stuff in Australia that we also believe to be pretty old, something around 40,000 or more. But that one isn't dated by, you know, radiometric dating or anything. That one we actually dated because the animals depicted in that one went extinct 40,000 years ago. And so we were like, hey, well, we think this is about 40,000 years old. Now, it could be that those animals live longer than we thought, or maybe we were getting the wrong animal. But seemingly, we have some stuff around that old, at least, and definitely some stuff dated pretty solidly into around the 30,000. Year range. And we have Lascaux in France, which is an amazing, and Chauvet caves in France, some amazing rock art that like changes with the candlelight that you bring in and stuff. That stuff is like 35,000 years old. So this was certainly something that kind of followed humans around. And as we went around, we continued to paint, often in something like red ochre, which is found throughout the world. It's a red pigment. It's one of the most commonly used pigments to paint the body, to paint rocks, to tan hides. Red ochre is used a lot. And it's really, really common. And one of the things I do like about rock art is how universal it is across cultures. Again, we just found a huge thing of red ochre paint that lasted over the period of like 8,000 years, starting 12,000 years ago in the northern South American rainforest. And they're using red ochre here where we are in San Diego, and they're using red ochre in Africa, and they're using red ochre in Southeast Asia and Europe and everywhere else. So it is this idea that humans everywhere have used this one specific mineral to basically paint on their bodies and on rocks for hundreds of thousands of years, which is pretty cool. Now, the other thing that I found cool is we talked about all these animal scenes, hunting scenes, all that kind of stuff. Those vary. Different animals in different places, that kind of stuff. However, there is one thing that is an almost human universal. It stretches across tens of thousands of years, maybe even longer. Across the continents, it's everywhere from rock art in South America to rock art right where we are. I could, Damien, I could hike you out to a rock art site that displays this exact same symbol. You could go to a place in Europe, a place in Africa, a place in Asia. You'd find it everywhere there, frequently in red ochre. You'd find it in Australia. There's actually some in this cave, the one we just talked about in southern Indonesia.
Is it the Stussy S?
Yeah, you got to do the six straight lines. And then you need to connect them.
Do our foreign listeners, is that joke lost? I know every American kid who grew up, when we grew up, know about the Stussy S.
You had to learn how to do it. Otherwise, you couldn't graduate eighth grade. No child left behind. Damon, can you guess what that one symbol is? The thing that is a human universal throughout tens of thousands of years of time and literally every place on the globe that human beings have reached.
The easy answer is the penis, but I'm not going to go with that. The bow and arrow wasn't available all over.
Right.
Now, my next guess would be like the cat video or something, but nope, that wasn't domesticated. So we're going to go with babies.
Oh, interesting. No, it's a handprint. So the most common piece of rock art found everywhere around the world is a handprint. Now, there's two ways. There's positive and negative relief. So one of them is like your hand gets dipped in ochre and then pushed onto the rock, so it leaves a record of your handprint. And one is you put your hand against the rock and then you crush the ochre up with some charcoal in your mouth and you spit around it to create kind of a negative version of your hand. But whether you're in Australia, South America, right here where we're sitting, Damien, whether you're in Africa, Southeast Asia, Europe, you will see these. If you look up the article we are talking about this Indonesian rock art, that's some of the oldest rock art ever, you will see these handprints in them. It is super neat.
And then they would draw the rest of the turkey, like with other paint.
Yeah. I don't know. It is interesting. It's like the first tag. It's like grunt was here, you know? And like everybody did it. everybody, even more than the Stussy S, everybody did this all around the world for tens of thousands of years.
Wait a second, I know that hand. That grunt's hand. Grunt!
It's just such a cool thing. So, yeah, I actually think that this should be part of a modern-day ceremony we all participate in, where I'm going to have my son do this, where every year on his birthday, he marks his handprint on a boulder. Instead of him getting taller, notched against the wall, we'll see his handprint getting bigger and bigger.
Do it against the side of your neighbor's house.
And then if he says anything, the side of his wife's face.
Wow, your son left an impressive handprint on that adult woman's face.
Don't let her watch it. It's special. So anyway, that has been my tell me a story about rock art. That's why I love rock art so much. I think it's one of the most amazing things about the ancient world. One of the coolest things to look back at. And this particular discovery in southern Indonesia is pushing back the dates of a lot of that stuff. It is just so cool. I will say not nearly as cool as the giant 12,000-year-old one that's in the northern Amazon rainforest, just because that one is so huge and big and ridiculous. And that one's kind of outdoors, not in a cave. But still, utterly cool, and a weird glimpse into the thought process of human beings who lived 45 millennia ago.
Okay, now, I know why there wasn't a lot of dick drawings. Like a lot of them were done freehand, but they weren't done like the way the hand was done. You know, like where you take, where you either do the negative relief or yes. The positive relief. Because one, the negative relief, I'd need a friend. Hey, I'm going to put my dick, my yes. huge monstrous dick that I want to show off on this uh-huh. wall. Can you spit on it with charcoal and this red ochre?
Yeah.
Now, Bobby, you and I are close. You know what? I would say that close. Moving on.
It is one of those things a creepy dude in the Paleolithic would do to try and get women to sleep with them. He's like, just spit near it. And then it becomes like, well, you're not getting close enough. And then all of a sudden you got a dick in your mouth.
You know, statistically, there was one. Your average guy would probably talk a big game and draw a lot of penises, but he'd draw these penises much bigger than what he was packing. There was probably one guy out there. And Bobby, you might be the archaeologist to find this site. But uh-huh. there was one guy who was Dirk Diggler, who was packing heat. And you're yeah. going to find that negative or positive relief somewhere.
I will say there is a famous rock art site, Kumeyaay rock art site here in San Diego called the Star Cave. It's one of the few publicly known ones. And one of the images is a dude with just like a third leg dong.
But like, is it like I drew this of myself, or was it like a tracing?
No, it was just like a stick figure.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. But he's tripoding it. Like, it is a big deal.
I respect the artist. Game respects game.
And I respect the art. All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 538, where you learned all about the story of rock art. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 539.
Yonis for my homies.
You've been listening to Science Function. Wait, that's not right.